in thinking how difficult it is to trust your perception, I think.
And is there anyone to trust?
Well, perhaps if I give an example, the words aren't quite right. There's a famous picture of Van Gogh's, which has a field of wheat with crows flying through it. It was in a book called Ways of Seeing by John Berger. And what it said was, this is a picture painted by Van Gogh, when you turn the page, there's the added little postscript to it of saying, this in fact was the last picture painted by Van Gogh, and your perception of the picture changes in that instant. What is happening there?
Thinking. John used the word trust. And perhaps that sense of what can be trusted is like, what is right understanding? Like, how can right understanding be known? How can we begin to know right understanding when it appears, even when it is weak?
When it's about reality which is appearing, and there is a little or more understanding, better and better understanding, that is right.
So being very clear about what are the realities that can appear.
What is appearing?
It's so true, so real.
How can we find out the truth from what appears?
Thank you. This is like having a Dhamma discussion in a hospital.
One becomes aware of these things, then there can be a lot of almost tension between them. So you can say, okay, I want to try and block this pain out for a while, and then to what extent am I trying to put eye into it and alter what's going on? I've still got a sore throat, it's still pretty out there. It's
not hard task.
No, it's not hard. No, sure, sure.
Because it just happens. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Yeah. But when one is trying so hard, it's hard, very hard. So it depends, because some would like to know, and inundated so hard to just be aware of everything, trying to know the name and the relation.
That's doing awareness.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not awareness itself, which is doing.
Oh, no, 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 this is just a straight awareness. This is not doing awareness. I feel pain in the back of my throat. Mm-hmm. And I listen to you for a while, mm-hmm. and that pain, I'm not paying attention to it. It's still there. Mm. Then rises again. And if all this pain and...
But under normal circumstances, that does not present a dilemma, because everyone has that same thing the whole day through.
I do just wallow in the pain, do I?
If you think about it too much, it presents a dilemma.
If anger or something like that arises, then you can do something to change that feeling. Yes?
Should we change the object to which we attend?
It's already gone. Yeah. Before you change?
Yeah, okay, so it comes back again to right understanding.
Yesterday we had some brief discussion at the airport about conceit. And one knows that conceit arises with particular kinds of attachment, but can one say generally less attachment, less conceit?
It means that conceit always arises with lobha, that's all.
So when we say less attachment, less conceit, it just means that particular kind of attachment with conceit, that's all?
It depends on whether what is less, conceit is less, or lobha is less.
Because I heard you make some comment on a tape, less attachment, less conceit. So I wondered whether you were meaning just less conceit with attachment, that kind, or whether you were talking in general, less attachment in general.
As there are conditions for them, it depends on what becomes less.
Accumulations.
Yeah. For example, if there is less attachment to the self, yes, then
there will be less conceit, yes. So less attachment to self, even without conceit.
But even so, I think that we cannot say for everyone, like King Mahanama, he was a satapanna, but he had strong conceit.
Right. One cannot just say Aryans will have less conceit because there's less attachment in general.
Because of the great accumulation of conceit. Yeah.
Right. And one cannot say less wrong view, less conceit. Right. One cannot say that.
Can there be conceit with dosa? Or there's no way.
Never.
Different
moment.
On another moment, yeah.
It's like seeing and hearing. never the same moment. It seems like spontaneous.
Like when you gave the example of thinking, I can't put up with hardship as well as other people, something, and it seems that it's with dosa, but one minute of the conceit and comparing, another moment of dosa or something. Following each other. And actually, in that example, one never knows how much akusala others have about difficulties or something like this. We don't know.
Just going back to our little conversation at the airport yesterday, because we were also talking about enjoying and about whether it was possible to enjoy without lopa, and you said, of course.
We can talk about vedana.
Well, I think maybe I had used the word enjoy when I was really talking about joy.
But can we know whether it's kusala or akusala without knowing the feeling and other chetasikas which accompany?
No. So that's the indication.
But there can be wholesome joy, piti, with pleasant feeling, but it's quite different from enjoyment.
Yes, and I think I'd actually use that incorrectly.
For example, in the holy places, one may feel a lot of joy when one pays respect. Piti, P-I-T-I, is joy, but that is also a pleasant feeling, but it's wholesome joy. So,
okay.
But I think what we are used to talking about, taking enjoyment in the sunset, or in, this is always with attachment.
I think that's what my question was trying to get at, what you give an example of. Which can be unprompted. That kind of joy can be unprompted.
Unprompted or prompted.
Yes.
Strong or weak. Like even now, there can be joy in hearing the Dhamma. It can be kusala, also with pleasant feeling. A couple of questions on one or two lines from the Metta Sutta. In the Metta Sutta, it says, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness. Well, we know anyone should develop metta. And from the commentary, by one who is skilled in goodness, it says herein, those with skill in good, praised insofar as they are established in the virtue that provides non-remorse, or they exert themselves in the way of suppression of defilement, or as far as they attain their paths and fruitions, are those with skill in good. And those bhikkhus were of such kinds. Could you say a little?
Does it mean jhana?
What I'm a little bit surprised about is because this is the commentary to the first lines, and it was only later that they attained jhanas and became sotapanna. So when it starts off by saying, by one skilled in goodness, and it suggests either by way of suppression of defilement, this is jhana, or so far as they're established in the virtue that provides non-remorse. Do you think this refers to sotapanna, the virtue that provides non-remorse?
It can, because one has to have this stage first.
Has to be sotapanna first, so there's no remorse about not keeping sila, or refers to the paths and fruitions. Well, this is what I thought, but then later it says they became sotapannas. But here it says these monks were of such kinds, suggesting already. So I'm just interested in when it says these monks are of such kinds, what it means. Does it mean they are the ones that have the potential to become enlightened or attain jhanas?
It refers to the lines before this.
Yes. Yeah. Who is skilled in goodness.
Such kind.
Such kind. But they're not already skilled in good. They're not already sotapanna or attained jhanas.
After development.
After development. I see. So it's referring to the fulfillment of the development.
It should be like that.
It should be like that. because people read something like the Metta Sutta and about the quality of universal metta and this kind of thing, and they think it's for anyone, not just those with that particular ability on the point of becoming enlightened or attaining the jhanas.
I think that when we read Tipitaka, we think that we should be like that, but right. Actually it's not at all. It just talk about reality so that we can check or test or know oneself which level we are.
And this is a very high level.
Yes. And the provides non-remorse has to refer to the virtue of the Sotapanna who cannot break the precepts, so therefore no remorse on account of the virtue, because the virtue cannot be broken.
And you're quite right. We read about that and we think, yes, how helpful that would be if there were more metta for everybody. But I know that when I have tried to have metta, usually what happens is the opposite. That it's like I realize how little metta there is there when there is trying to have metta, or how, yes, kindness for this one, but not that one. So it's like it's a good test of
this bigger, not that bigger.
All of that. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's inspiring, but it's also a reality check.
Right. Yes. And that's why Buddha told us to know the truth. How much we have, or very little we have.
And the object of metta. What is the object of metta?
Beings.
Beings. Mm-hmm. So concept.
Because we cannot metta visible object.
No. Rupa cannot be object of metta.
Yeah. Because it's only rupa. When we know that,
yes,
it cannot condition metta to the flower.
Yes.
So,
yes. Mm-hmm. What about animals?
Yes, animal is being.
Animals.
Yeah.
Animals.
Or insects.
I have accumulations, or there are accumulations, to very easily feel, to care for animals. Very easy to do this.
My accumulation is ubekha.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I know that I cannot help all of them.
Yes.
I was thinking about upekkha the other day after one of the discussion that we had, and I think John mentioned indifferent feeling and indifference also. We mentioned compassion and indifference. Mm. And I thought afterwards that I could have mentioned during that discussion that there is, as well as compassion and metta, there is another wholesome quality which is called upekkha, which is equanimity, which means neither compassion nor metta. But it's not indifference, because indifference is an unwholesome quality of being uncaring. But equanimity means one is not moved, because when the situation is one such as a being is suffering, but there is nothing we can do to help the being, then it is an occasion when there may be upekkha, which is a wholesome feeling of equanimity, of understanding and appreciating that the being is experiencing the result of past karma and that sort of thing.
And which, when other people are present, could easily be, if they try to read your citta, they could easily read as your indifference.
Yes, exactly. The sutta that Sarah was just asking about, it seems like we can read it almost as if this is what to do. But Kunsa Jin was saying it's really only when there is a lot of understanding and a lot of development that this becomes possible, because there are no exceptions in terms of who the loving kindness are directed towards. It's all encompassing.
During the break, we were discussing reading suttas and the importance of not only having discussion but also familiarizing ourselves with the text, because John asked a question, you know, how does one know what one hears is true Dhamma, and if there is to be reflection on it. As a beginner, one doesn't know, and we're all beginners, because of our intuitive wrong view and ignorance and so forth. we don't know what is true Dhamma, what is not.
So when it's right. Dhamma.
How does one know? How does the beginner's mind know it's right?
Seeing is a reality. It's real. It cannot stay. Because there is seeing right now. It can be proven. It can be contemplated.
It's the same for everyone.
Yeah.
Just seeing.
You talk about knowing these things, and you talk about accumulations from past lives. Where does past lives go through one of the sense doors? How do I know there have been these past lives?
When we talk about lives, what is a life?
One moment passing.
Mm-hmm. One moment of what?
Of
experiencing an object.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, give me a day or two and I'll think about it. I'm a novice.
Because it's true, see? Yeah. What is the world? What is a life? Is this right? When it's right, it's true.
And can be known.
And can be known.
If there is sound heard, everyone knows there is sound heard. But there is sound heard. There's no person in it, or it doesn't belong to anyone. It really can be tested right now. There is only sound which is heard.
And one day it can be directly experienced, because it's so true. At any time.
Realities that go through the mind door sets, they seem to me to be a bit harder to make sure.
You don't think about Dory, yeah?
Just thinking, how much thinking there is.
This is a slightly technical question that came up on the list. Can we refer to kusala citta with panya that is not bhavana, bhavana's mental development?
So it depends on what is the meaning of bhavana. It's not sitting like this. So it's the development from the very beginning, from hearing, considering, until being aware.
But can there be some moments of kusala citta with panya? For example, someone may know something about karma, about cause and result, but it's not actually any development.
But one day it will lead to more understanding if one keeps on the right path.
But those odd moments of wise reflection with panya, must they be moments of bhavana or just...
It depends on what we mean by the word bhavana. Yeah.
Well, usually by bhavana it refers to samatha, bhavana, development of calm, or satipatthana or vipassana, bhavana. But of course, there can be moments of awareness or there can be moments with panya, which is not actually development.
Can hearing be conditioned for bhavana?
Can
thinking?
Yes.
Yeah. So, when there is such understanding,
it is a condition for bhavana. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So any wise reflection, any moments of panya, a condition for bhavana.
Yeah.
So in this sense, it is the beginning of bhavana.
Yeah. Even seeing someone killing something and there's such idea that I will not kill, that is sammapatthana, the beginning of samatha. See?
Beginning of samatha.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
it's
that
like
is, what did you say?
The beginning of sammapatthana.
Sammapatthana.
Yeah, in commentary.
So right effort.
Mm-hmm. Even that, it will lead to later.
So it's like the footsteps of bhavana.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Kunzi Chen, could you just go back to that? So if you say something, well, you said like killing, or, and so there's a recognition not to do it, is it?
You have intention or thinking that I won't do like that. Even such moment, which is kusala, will lead to more understanding and it will lead to sammapatthana, the four sammapatthana.
The four right efforts.
Yeah.
Because there's an intrinsic understanding of the unwholesomeness of what is seen, or what?
Because at that moment there is a degree of wisdom that sees the value of abstaining from unwholesome deeds, so it will lead to more wisdom that appreciates what is good and what is bad.